some refugees may feel pressured into relocating to Bashanchar.
Opposition to Rohingya refugee relocation. It's Tuesday, December 8th. This is VOA Asia. I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. Find us online at VOA Asia Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, and YouTube. Also ahead, a key election remains in the United States. Cooling COVID. Social media creates social divides. Restoring dignity and the joy of riding a horse. It's all on today's VOA Asia. The United Nations Refugee Agency says it opposes the relocation of Rohingya refugees from Cox's Bazar, Bangladesh, to a remote island in the Bay of Bengal. Lisa Schlein has more for VOA from Geneva.
Bangladeshi authorities Friday moved more than 1,500 Rohingya refugees to Bashanchar, an uninhabited Bay of Bengal island vulnerable to cyclones and prone to flooding. UN High Commissioner for Refugees spokesman Baba Baluch says the United Nations was not involved in the preparation of this movement. He says it did not know the identification of the refugees and had limited information on the overall relocation operation. He says the UNHCR is concerned that the Rohingya refugees did not have the information they needed to make a free and informed decision about relocating to Bashanchar.
We have heard reports from the camps that some refugees may feel pressured into relocating to Bashanchar or may have changed their initial views about relocation and no longer wish to move. If so, they should be allowed to remain in the camps.
In 2017, nearly 1 million refugees fled persecution and violence in Myanmar for Cox's Bazar, where they are living in squalid and overcrowded camps. Bangladesh says it wants to ease congestion in the camps and sees the recent relocation of the Rohingya as the first step in a plan to move 100,000 refugees to Bashanchar. The UN is calling on the government to respect its commitment that the movements to the island would be voluntary. Baluch says the UNHCR is troubled by images of distressed refugees during the relocation process and has conveyed its concerns to Bangladeshi authorities.
We again emphasize that all movements, as mentioned earlier, to Bashanchar must be voluntary and based upon consultations and full information regarding conditions of life on the island and the rights and services that refugees will be able to access.
Baluch says the UN has limited information about conditions on the island and wants the government to grant on-site visits to verify that the island is a safe and sustainable place to live. He says the refugees must have access to health, livelihood and education and be protected from natural disasters and other dangers. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
Meanwhile, India's farmers' protest has extended to the large Indian diaspora in England, where thousands of people protested and blocked traffic in central London over Indian agricultural reforms that have triggered mass demonstrations in India. Police made 13 arrests in London over breaches of COVID regulations. A crowd of demonstrators converged on the Indian embassy, located on a major artery in the center of the British capital, and groups marched around the Trafalgar Square area. Tens of thousands of farmers have protested in India against three laws the government says are meant to overhaul antiquated procurement procedures and give growers more options to sell their produce. Farmers fear the legislation, which was passed in September, will eventually dismantle India's regulated markets and stop the government from buying wheat and rice at guaranteed prices, leaving them at the mercy of private buyers. You can find more on all these stories by following our Twitter stream at VOA Asia. We're also on Facebook at VOA Asia, and we invite you to stop by our website, voanews.com. These are among some of the top Asia headlines you'll find right now when you visit voanews.com. Indonesian police kill supporters of hardline cleric in Jakarta highway clash. Residents of Australia's Fraser Island Township urged to evacuate as wildfire approaches. Malaysia's COVID woes spotlight terrible migrant worker housing. Observers say Beijing's planned blacklist of Taiwan secessionists could backfire. Pakistan suspends senior hospital staff after oxygen shortage kills six COVID patients. You'll find more on all of these stories on Facebook at VOA Asia, as well as our voanews.com website. I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. We continue now with VOA Asia. In U.S. politics, Republicans and Democrats are working to get Georgia residents to vote in the January 5th runoff election. That will decide control of the U.S. Senate. But Republicans are also divided about the results of the November 3rd presidential race, with President Donald Trump still asserting widespread voter fraud. Michelle Quinn reports.
Pressure is building in the southern U.S. state of Georgia as Democrats and Republicans encourage people to start voting as early as December 14 in two runoff races. The outcome of the election set for January 5th will determine which political party will be in the majority in the U.S. Senate.
At stake in this election is control of the U.S. Senate, and that really means control of this country.
Former President Barack Obama.
The special election in Georgia is going to determine, ultimately, the course of the Biden presidency and whether Joe Biden and Kamala Harris can deliver legislatively all the commitments they've made.
For Republicans, there are mixed feelings about the integrity of the state's voting system. After Democrat and former Vice President Joe Biden won the state by about 12,000 votes. President Donald Trump has called on Georgia Governor Brian Kemp, a Republican, to ask the state legislature to overturn the election results and order an audit of mail ballot signatures. Still at a rally in the state over the weekend, Trump, who has refused to concede, encouraged people to start voting.
You must go vote and vote early starting December 14th. You have to do it. They cheated and they rigged our presidential election, but we will still win it.
That mixed message is making it hard for some state leaders, many of whom are Republican, like Kemp. Another is Georgia's Secretary of State, Brad Raffensperger, who oversees the state's election system.
The job of the Republican Party is to raise money and turn out the vote. My job as Secretary of State is to make sure we have honest and fair elections. It's as simple as that. And I think in my office, integrity matters.
The misinformation around the presidential election results is complicating efforts among Republicans to get out the vote, Raffensperger said.
Well, it makes it, these distractions, this disunity, it does make it more difficult. And so the candidates are out there running hard.
In the coming weeks, all eyes will be on the Peach State as both Democrats and Republicans work to get out the vote. Michelle Quinn, VOA News.
Happening now in Asia, Chinese State Councilor and Foreign Minister Wang Yi met with the board of the U.S.-China Business Council to urge the United States to put bilateral relations back on track despite the disruptions that the two countries have faced over the past month. Stay up to date with VOA. You're listening to VOA Asia. It's nice to have you with us today on VOA Asia. At least one person has died and 200 others have been hospitalized due to an unidentified illness in the southern Indian state of Andhra Pradesh. Reports Monday say the illness was detected late Saturday in Elru, an ancient city famous for its hand-woven products. Since then, patients have experienced symptoms ranging from nausea and anxiety to loss of consciousness. Doctors say a 45-year-old man who was hospitalized with symptoms similar to epilepsy and nausea died late Sunday. The Press Trust of India news agency reports officials are trying to determine the cause of the illness. So far, water samples from impacted areas have not shown any signs of contamination, and patients have tested negative for COVID-19. Meanwhile, the Pfizer-BioNTech vaccine against coronavirus must be stored at extremely cold temperatures, and that's raising some concerns about the difficult task of moving it across the United States for inoculations. But dry ice companies across the U.S. say they're up for the challenge. Isha Sarai spoke with one such company in Baltimore, Maryland.
As the U.S. moves to approve the Pfizer-BioNTech vaccine against the coronavirus, a big challenge will be keeping the vaccine cold.
It's got to be kept between not minus 70 and minus 90, which the dry ice can do.
But this dry ice maker in Baltimore, with decades of experience and five warehouse employees, says it won't be competing for business.
This is going to be a national deal. I don't believe there's any one dry ice company that can take care of all that.
Most companies like Capital Carbonic are already producing the specific size and shape of ice. Pfizer, and likely other vaccine companies, would require the ice to come in a pellet smaller than the standard 5/8 size.
It's a lot. It'll fit down in the boxes a lot more than a regular 5/8 standard pellet. This is for a lot of biomedical researchers that use this.
Although the task seems daunting, Weldon says that having worked with the National Institute of Health for years, his company is up to the challenge.
We're ready. I mean, our tanks are full. You know, I mean, we're capable of running 7 days a week.
And Capital Carbonic does expect that once distribution starts, dry ice production will be a 24/7 job. Isha Sarai, VOA News, Baltimore.
Authorities in Pakistan suspended seven senior officers at a government hospital Monday after an inquiry found their criminal negligence resulted in the disruption of oxygen supply to the facility, killing six coronavirus patients. The deaths occurred the previous day in Peshawar as the country of about 220 million battles a second wave of the COVID-19 pandemic. The coronavirus is making existing problems even worse. An estimated 17 out of every 10,000 Americans experience homelessness on any given night. But as Nguyen Le reports, a network of shelters and volunteers are still trying to make them feel at home.
The Manassas Homeless Center in Virginia is about an hour from Washington, D.C. And during this holiday season, volunteers are delivering a traditional Thanksgiving dinner.
Today, we serve everyone here with turkey, ham, mashed potato, and pumpkin pies. These are popular traditional American foods on this occasion.
The year-end holiday season starting in November in the U.S. is always the busiest time for charity groups. It's when they visit these shelters to serve food and show love and care to the needy.
Fresh meal is definitely helping people living here. They can count on coming here and getting something good to eat, coming off the street and making the best of their days.
Because of the ongoing pandemic, many activities to support the homeless, such as providing hot meals and distributing free warm clothes at public places, have been canceled. That's why today's visit is both meaningful and helpful.
Any meals, any donations that we get, it always helps them. Right now, it's quiet because they're sleeping, but they'll be up very soon looking for something to eat. So this meal actually came right on time for lunch. So yeah, it would definitely help.
Mm-hmm. When people gather for Thanksgiving, we feel lucky that we are surrounded by family, friends, and loved ones. These needy here might feel lonely and miserable, lacking those sacred things in life. That's why we come here to show love and understanding.
This group has also prepared 80 meals to serve at another shelter on Thanksgiving Day as a way to help those less fortunate in these difficult times. Mula, VOA Vietnamese, reporting from Manassas, Virginia.
After you listen to VOA Asia, you can see VOA Asia. VOA Asia is on YouTube. See and share the fun with Food Bites, our weekly culinary dive into foods from the homeland. Recipes that came with chefs who immigrated to the United States. Students enrolling in U.S. schools can get their first lessons about life on campus. Subscribe for free. See us often at VOA Asia YouTube.
This news from VOA Asia. New Zealand Prime Minister Jacinda Ardern vowed accountability for families of last year's Christchurch mosque attack victims ahead of the public release of a major report into the country's worst massacre. You'll find all the big stories throughout the day on VOA Asia Twitter and Facebook. This is VOA Asia. As VOA Asia continues, people are spending more time at home because of the pandemic. Online social networks can be a great tool to communicate and maintain friendships. But here in the United States, politics and COVID are making personal relationships and social networks feel very antisocial for some people. Ina Vishneva has the story, narrated by Anna Rice.
The U.S. elections are over while COVID is still raging, and both are issues that continue to divide American society.
Hey, Eddie, how you doing?
Kevin McMullen's family hasn't been talking to him much since 2016, when he voted for Democrat Hillary Clinton in the presidential election. And when they do talk, conversations often end in fights. Born in Pennsylvania, McMullen moved to New York City 15 years ago. These days, he rarely returns home to see his family.
No, I don't only watch CNN. Hold on, I watch Fox News as well, just FYI.
Lyubov Borat and her brother Yakov came to the U.S. from Russia more than four decades ago. When they arrived, Jimmy Carter was president. They voted for Ronald Reagan and then for other Republican presidential candidates. But after George W. Bush, Lyubov Borat has been voting for Democrats, and their relationship with their family became strained.
I'm not talking to my sister, I'm not talking with a friend of mine, after 25 years of friendship, and it's painful.
The growing polarization in the U.S. is not a new phenomenon, but social networks seem to aggravate conflict and ruin friendships.
I personally have unfollowed people since the 2008-2016, and even this year.
Sue Sheff is author of the book Shame Nation, The Global Epidemic of Online Hate. She says that when it's impossible to agree on a subject, the best thing to do is stop seeing the person's posts on your social network feed.
The hate, is the divisiveness, is not healthy for anybody.
Interestingly, those who support Democrats tend to unfriend people with opposing views three times more often, according to a study by the Public Religion Research Institute. And over 80% of voters admit they don't have close friends who vote for the opposing party. Even dating websites have become political, reports the Institute. Over 84% of registered users said they didn't want to date people who don't agree with them politically. As for Kevin McMullen, he shut down his Facebook page a few years ago, saying he got tired of all the aggression. Despite that, he hopes his relationship with his family becomes warmer with time. Because, he says, no matter who is running the country, your family never changes. For Nina Vishnova in New York, Anna Rice, VOA News.
How to stay healthy. Wash your hands with soap and water before you eat, after using the toilet, after touching anything many other people touch, like a seat on a public bus. Scrub thoroughly for 20 seconds. If you cannot wash your hands, use a hand sanitizer. Taking these steps can prevent not only coronavirus, but also colds and flu and other viruses.
Now on VOA Asia, art therapy can be part of working through past trauma. Maxim Moskalkov tells the story of sexual assault survivors who have turned therapy into a thriving business that also helps other women survivors.
Cousins Ellie Clogerty and Kristen Malinowski grew up in Northern Virginia and both headed to Virginia Tech to get a degree in neurobiology. The young women had a lot in common. One of the big things, both say they are survivors of campus sexual assault. As part of their recovery, the two launched a jewelry line called Camaria.
When I started designing jewelry, I went from an idea of something that wasn't in existence yet, and you could just find a way to bring it to life.
The young women started studying jewelry making in New York and traveled the world to learn different jewelry styles. A year after Camaria was launched, Clogerty and Malinowski started a nonprofit called Restore Dignity that offers financial help to the victims of campus sexual assault. 10% of Camarilla's proceeds go to the Restore Dignity.
You would be surprised to know that we have had applications from students who are having their diplomas held until they pay their student health care costs. And those student health care costs were directly attributed to sexual assault.
Many jewelry pieces that Klogerty and Malinowski make are asymmetrical. The cousins say they are meant to show beauty in imperfection.
It's so meaningful, and it's easy to attach symbology to something so small.
One of our signature pieces is the butterfly necklace, and the butterfly represents hope and transformation, which is a good reminder for survivors.
The young women believe the COVID pandemic has taught people to be more empathetic towards each other. They say these times are forcing many people to lead very isolated lives, like the ones sexual assault victims often lead.
Camarilla means moonlight in Swahili, so the idea is, like the moon, even when you're surrounded by darkness, you reflect light just because you exist.
We're going to support...
Maxim Moskalko for VOA News, Washington.
The joy of riding a horse is often confined to those in the countryside or other wealthy enough to make the needed arrangements. VOA's Marcia James went to a camp in Baltimore, Maryland, to find out more about one man's efforts to broaden the experience. We hear from the owner of City Ranch, Ahissa McDon, and some of his volunteers in their own words.
When I was early childhood, my mother would take me to my uncles who were sharecroppers. They had mules, and we rode the mules, and that was it. And then when we moved to Baltimore, I got involved with Nixon's Farm, where we did a summer program, and I got involved with the horses, and that was in the early 60s, and so I've been just at it ever since. I had a favorite. It died, and it was the genesis of this whole program. The program is City Ranch, and our mission is to make horseback riding accessible and affordable to the inner city, the Baltimore community, that may not have the opportunity to do it.
I've been here since February, so not too long, but I couldn't imagine my life without horses, so I'm very thankful to find this place.
I love it. I wouldn't come here if I didn't.
One thing that I focus on is taking the horses to where the children are, because if they don't have financial resources, getting out here, whether it's on a bus, on Uber, or whatever the current method of transportation is difficult. So we want to take the horses into their community.
I really like being here at the farm. This is one of the most accepted, like, places that I feel. Just because I've never really had a barn buddy until I came here, and I've been riding for 10 years. Everyone here is so nice and welcoming, and I feel like a part of the family, even though I've only been here for a few months.
So, just letting it all.
Yeah, I'm sweaty now. So, what got me involved since 2009 was I was fresh out of high school. I've always loved and worked with horses. And when I went to Artscape in the summer of 2009, I was totally encapsulated. And Mr. Dawn was able to give me that outlet, and I've been able to work with so many students, so many children, so many adults, and really just share my passion with other people.
Okay. Creating an institution that outlasts me is when I'm gone, there is still a City Ranch. It doesn't necessarily have to be the same name, but there's still an equine program dedicated and focused toward the community of Baltimore City.
Ahissa McDon and volunteers from City Ranch, which offers the chance for more people to experience horse riding. That's our program for today. Thanks for joining us on VOA Asia. You may continue online. We're at Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, and YouTube. Just look us up under the name VOA Asia. We also thank those who help bring this program to you every day, our managing editor, Diane Gao, Ira Melman, Doug Bernard, and Keith Lane. I'm Jim Stevenson. We're in Washington. We hope you have a wonderful day ahead. Be safe. Be well.